Kind of natural transition from, yes, I got to work on quality, but before I work on quality, I got to fix the manufacturing and make sure that they've got the right tools and training.
Bashi presents The Means of Production, a podcast about what it really takes to build, maintain, and scale the processes that produce the physical products that power our world. Every episode, we ask a manufacturing expert to walk us through the nuts and bolts of how they do their job. We explore how and why they got into manufacturing, dive deep into the hardest problems they've solved on production lines, and discuss their thoughts on what's broken in manufacturing today and how those things can be fixed. This podcast is hosted by Siddhit Sanghvi, Bashi's U.S. Manufacturing Operations Lead and former assembly engineer at Ford Motor Company. If you are a part of the manufacturing world and you're interested in being a guest on The Means of Production, please email siddhit@bashi.com. That's siddhit@bashi.com. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 2. With us today is Rumit Mehta, the Global Quality Transformation Leader at Cummins, and a very good friend of mine. So Rumit, I'm very excited for you to be here. But before we get started with our podcast, a quick disclaimer.
Sure. So hi guys, I'm Rumit Mehta. I go by Riggy as well. I work at Cummins, and this is my own opinion of whatever I talk over here and not an opinion of Cummins. I'm not a spokesperson for Cummins, official or otherwise.
Thanks, Rumit. So with that really boring stuff out of the way, firstly, what are you doing these days? What's happening? How is work at Cummins? How is life in general? Let's start there.
Yeah, the work in Cummins, we are still all working remotely due to the pandemic. Now, of course, the manufacturing sites, they all have to go and follow the protocols, the COVID-19 protocols, and wear masks. But folks like me who could work remotely, we are all working remotely. Yeah, one other thing is the travel is certainly would want to go to travel different manufacturing sites and then see the improvements we are implementing there. But unfortunately, due to pandemic, there's a travel restriction. But hopefully, once everyone's vaccinated, so that's the light at the end of the tunnel. I've actually personally got my first shot already. Pfizer. And now, yeah, we'll be getting a second shot maybe in a few weeks. Yeah, in Indiana, it's opened up to everybody now over the age of, I want to say, 18, which is a good thing. But yeah, no, in general, yeah, we are adopting to the new work life, working from home and also teaching the kids from home, right? They all remote school, virtual school. So just adopting the new way of life.
No, that's fantastic. And I think that's what everyone's trying to do. And manufacturing is even more difficult because it's not something that is naturally digital. It's very mm-hmm. in-person, it's very physical. And traveling is like a real thing where you don't have everything in the same office or facility. So yeah, there is just an added level of difficulty to an already difficult field, right? So, all right.
Absolutely.
So let's get down to the questions. I'm always very excited about the questions because I always get great conversations. So the first question is, how did you get into engine manufacturing, Cummins, or just this whole industry in general? How did you get here?
Well, I mean, it all starts with what you pick as your major in college. It gets determined at that point. So I picked mechanical engineering, not industrial. But yeah, from mechanical, I did a specialization in turbo machinery. So from turbo machinery, rotor dynamics was what I got my master's in. And through there, Cummins does make turbos. So it was just directly from college. I was able to get a job in Cummins and move here to Indiana. So, and then once you start at Cummins, there are so many different, we have six business units. So we move from one role to the other role, explore different fields, right? So I went from application engineering to product engineering to engine. Now from turbo, I went into the actual engine, the core engine business unit, went into that, into the air handling, other components of air handling, right? I mean, turbo is a big part, but there are others as well. Yeah, got into that, got into being defining the engineering standard works for certain components. From there, led a team of engineers to solve warranty problems. That was going from working on future products to supporting current products and reducing warranty problems. From there, I got a chance to work on the on a 5-liter engine. That was pretty neat. It was at the Columbus engine plant in Columbus, of course, Cummins engine plant or Columbus engine plant. We made the 5-liter engines over there for Nissan, and that was a pretty good experience working on the the manufacturing, it was the assembly, it was the machining. We had everything over there at their plant, so it was a pretty neat experience. And then after that, got my black belt certification, worked on completely outside of engineering now, different fields, projects. Of course, we had some engineering projects too. And then finally now, what I do is I lead the quality transformation for ABU. And for quality transformation, one of the foundation is really to make sure that the manufacturing is robust, right? The manufacturing has that infrastructure.
Yes, absolutely.
So it kind of natural transition from, yes, I got to work on quality, but before I work on quality, I got to fix the manufacturing and make sure that they've got the right tools and training. And so almost a year and a half ago, I went to our, we call it the Master Rebuild Centers. So this is remanufacturing is where I really get involved. And I was visiting, this was in Antofagasta in Chile. And
Rumit, I just want to interrupt you, sorry. So firstly, for our audiences, when Rumit says black belt, he's talking about his Six Sigma black belt. And second, Rumit, can you explain what remanufacturing is?
Yeah, so we manufacture, design and manufacture engines for several applications, right? Which include mining, construction, power gen. So when we do supply the engines to our customers, we also provide a service saying, hey, we're going to, once the engine has seen its first life, we'll take that engine back from you and we will rebuild it. Right, we will change the components that do need a change. We would reuse, we would inspect, reuse, and then rebuild that engine, and give a second life to that. So that's what we do, and then we remanufacture those engines, and specifically the engines that the majority are the bigger, larger size, higher displacement. Right, so like 78 liters, 60 liters, really large engines that get used in mining application and construction and those kind of things. So yeah, remanufacturing is just basically you manufacture the first time, now you're going it, you're dismantling the whole, tearing down the engine, cleaning it, inspecting it, verifying that it meets spec, and putting it together, rebuilding the whole thing, and of course testing it.
Cool. So sorry. Please go on with the rest of the answer where you were explaining that you started working with quality in remanufacturing and then go on.
Yeah. So after visiting some of the sites, and this was in Antofagasta in Chile, and folks there, certainly since it's remanufacturing, they don't have that core product engineering strength there. So a lot of the folks had not heard about the 7-step problem solving or the PFMEA, those kind of tools that we use in manufacturing and in Six Sigma. So the
7-step problem solving method. So I've known DMAIC as one of the methods. Is the 7-step process something that Cummins has, or is this something more general? Or
I mean, I've worked with a lot of suppliers, and 7-step is, I mean, some people call it 8D as well.
That I'm familiar with.
Yeah. Yes, so 8D is same thing as 7-step. So it's just this systematic approach of understanding what the assignable cause is and doing a fault tree analysis or 5 Eyes or depending on however you want to, whatever is required to solve that problem. But yeah, that 7-step is one of the things we do commonly use at Cummins.
Cool, thank you. And guys, I will link to some of the terms and the techniques that Rumit is mentioning in the show notes and give you resources to some articles explaining that. So those are very, very interesting things in the field of quality management. All right,
yeah,
Rumit,
yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Those, and then knowing that folks were not exposed to those type of tools, my next day and a half, I spent just training the folks over there on 7-step.
Oh, wow, okay.
And then, of course, we started the PFMEA too, right? What can go wrong
right.
in rebuilding that engine, right? There was no PFMEA that existed. Process failure mode effect analysis just didn't exist.
Right.
And I mean, again, this is remanufacturing, and a lot of the remanufacturing could be that we have either acquired it or it's a joint venture. So it's not all from the get-go Cummins, right? So we do have to go and introduce the way we work at a lot of these sites. So yeah, and then kicked off a PFMEA that went on for almost a month because there was just so many things over there, right? And of course, you got to do remotely, right? So
right.
it's not... And those folks are firefighting, so you don't get that much time throughout the day to kind of work on it. So, yeah, no, it gets pretty interesting how every
yeah.
site is different, how every site's skill sets are different, what tools they have. It could vastly vary the infrastructure they could have. It could be a huge difference in what one... We call it MRCs, Master Rebuild Centers, because they could, we do those, well, they are not high volume, but for us, they would be high volume, right? I mean, not, but yeah, they could vary significantly as to what tools they have, what infrastructure they have, their skill set, the knowledge, the product engineering piece, all that stuff. So
that just sounds like a challenge, just imagining it, because you're going to Chile and the language
yeah.
is different, and you have these guys from corporate coming in and showing you the process. I'm sure it must have been a lot of change management on everyone's part to learn the new process and learn how Cummins does its thing. So I can imagine that to be like a very exciting or challenging project. But
yeah,
thanks for the great answer. I think it was pretty good. You showed how you went from the mechanical, a very technical turbo side, all the way to something that requires a lot of process management, right? So that was a
yep.
great path right there.
So, yeah, so that's how I got to what I'm doing right now. It's just the interesting to kind of teach the folks how we would manufacture the engine from a first fit standpoint. And really our goal is how do we bring remanufacturing to a standard where we have our first fit manufacturing. So that's our journey right now. So
I see. So you want to bring it to the same level of standards and quality as the first time it's manufactured.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
because that's what our customer expects. So
correct. And you already have a lot of established protocol and documentation
correct.
With those. So that would be a natural step for you to do. So in when I was working at Ford Motor Company, they used to call this campaign, like a campaign line. It was usually reserved for giant like recalls and warranty issues. It wasn't so much as the repair. But they did have a reman facility in some other plants where I had not worked. And yeah, it was very similar to this. But we had a campaign line for that kind of thing. But that was more like bad news kind of a line.
So the difference here is that this whole facility is designed so there are 100 people on the shop floor. And it's designed only for to get, and these are not, I mean, we don't call these campaign. These are, they've seen their useful life. And now it's the core. We call it the dirty core that comes in. And then it's essentially the full thing is about remanufacturing. I see what you're saying. Like a lot of the first fit have like their repair line or campaign line. And sometimes they do have these campaigns that they have to bring a lot of engines
right.
back in to do those fixings. But some of these engines, they have not failed in the field. It's just they have seen that whatever 20,000 hours or wherever we draw the line for that specific application, specific customer, and we bring it back because we don't want the downtime for our customers.
No, I'm glad you made the distinction. So that definitely clears the impression I had. I thought this was like all of it, but this is more the engines that have already finish their life. They're not
correct.
Faulty in any way, or they are not returns in any way. They're more like ready for a second life, right?
Second
so,
life, yes.
So that's
yep.
that speaks to the durability of
oh,
Cummins.
Absolutely.
So
that
is fantastic.
And we don't do just one. I mean, it could be three times, four times.
Wow.
Yeah.
that is incredible.
Yeah.
Like a return, right? On one piece of equipment. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. Because one engine could be up to, you know, $500,000. So they are not cheap engines.
Yeah.
So going and buying new every time could be expensive, could be really expensive with the customers. So they try and remanufacture it. But even remanufacturing is not cheap, but still a little cheaper compared to the brand new engine. So
no, that is very fascinating. And you had mentioned this before, but can you say again, like, where, if you are allowed to, where these engines go, or what is their field application? What are they used in?
A good chunk of our, especially the high horsepower, again, it's a mix of power gen, mining, construction, a railway, a locomotive. So it's a variety of applications. But I think a lot of the, like, currently mining is pretty big. So a lot of these would be at a mine site. And they could be those huge haul trucks where the wheel size is literally 12 feet. So you look real tiny and when you're standing in front of that one giant wheel.
Oh, wow.
You know, that
yeah,
tire.
I've seen those on documentaries. Wow. Yeah, that's
so
incredible.
Those are huge haul trucks. And yeah, they could have like 50, 60, or even 100 haul trucks at one mine site. Yeah. And then for shovels, those kind of things. So yeah, they've got a huge list of applications where these engines can be deployed.
That, like, as an industrial engineer and assembly engineer, I'm almost like trying to imagine moving this on a line. This must be massive and slow, and it must be a challenge to work on just because of the size.
Yeah, it is exactly. I mean, yeah, some of these engines can have a large size, like 12 turbos on one engine.
Wow.
Yeah, they are massive. Yeah, I mean, it does take us time too to rebuild it, right? Some of these could take up to a month to fully rebuild the engine.
Wow. It's almost like restoration, you could call it, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like that. It's slow, it's very careful. It's taking something that you don't want to completely replace, but you want to replace the stuff that has been worn out while keeping the very durable core, I guess, just tuning it and just making it new again. So very,
yep,
very
yep.
Interesting. Very interesting. So thanks, Rumit. And I want to get into, like, and since it's full of challenges, I guess it's natural to ask, what is the hardest problem you faced in this field? It doesn't have to be just reman, but anytime, right? And how did you solve it? So just walk us through as if you were about to solve it, like you were going to work or whatever, and you saw this.
I mean, the hardest problem, I mean, there are several problems. I don't think there's one hardest problem, right? And I mean, a few problems that I can talk about, right? One is infrastructure that I talked about, right? That a lot of these are, since it's not first fit, it's remanufacturing. And a lot of sites we may have acquired or maybe joint ventures, and they don't have the infrastructure from a manufacturing standpoint, right? They may not have like manufacturing execution system, like MES.
Right.
They may not have access to BOMs, bill of materials, or access to PLM, product lifecycle management. So yeah, so I mean, again, it's all boils down to infrastructure, that if they don't have the right infrastructure, then they struggle, right? I mean, and so that's something that we have taken on, and we are working on improving the infrastructure, providing them with the right tool set, right skill set with MES. So we are deploying those type of tools in several sites globally right now. So
and here I just like to tell the audience that many people call this many different things, but in general a manufacturing execution system is like a basically a computerized system that is used to track and document the transformation of raw materials to finished goods across a plant or several plants or across several lines. And that is what Rumit is talking about, and he's deeply involved with that, considering all the changes he wants to bring about in reman or wherever these things are not yet in place. So that is what he refers to when he says manufacturing execution systems.
Yeah. Because it helps in capturing the genealogy of that engine, right? Otherwise you don't have that genealogy, you don't have that recipe of what you actually built with, right? What are those, if we really
right.
want to track our serial numbers, you want to track the batch codes, it just gets really challenging without an MES. So, and also the fail safes to capture defects, you're going to utilize the MES for several uses of it, right? So yeah, it's got huge benefits, and certainly all our first fits, we've got MES at our 20 plus first fit sites. But yeah, I think now we are just taking it to our remanufacturing sites as well. Yeah. No. So I think the other challenges are also time zone. That's a challenge that I sometimes run into, right? Because
such a global company, yeah.
Because we are supporting sites in India, sites in Australia, in China, Mongolia, and then of course here in North America, Chile, Peru, and South Africa. But now, how do we bring all those people at the same time on a call when we want to talk about problems or talk about solutions or brainstorming? I mean, you got to split them up or have late evening calls or sometimes early morning calls. And yeah, so that's certainly time zone is a challenge. And then languages is a challenge too, right? Now you've got, you're building the same engine in all these locations, right? And the work instructions is in English. And the folks in, let's say in Mongolia or let's say in Latin America, they may have a problem reading that. So we got to translate it into Spanish. Right. So yeah, I mean, we certainly a lot of challenges there as well. Time zones, languages. But yeah, no, we got to tackle all the challenges, right? It's how do we make sure that we meet all our customer needs in every part of the world, right? And if we have to do translations, we have to do training, we take that on. And yep. So yeah, so those are the few challenges I would say that we are seeing.
Right. So the quality team that you are involved with would not only do things like the MES, but would also do more training stuff or do documentation stuff. So all of that comes kind of under this purview.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yeah, we have a training call this evening, and we are bringing in folks from North America and Australia. So hence we got to pick a evening slot, 8 p.m. But yeah, I mean, training is a big aspect, right? You got to keep training them, keep making sure that, again, how the governance is a big challenge too, right? How do you make sure that folks adhere to that new process? And are now, if you certainly you could go and deploy that, but if you haven't trained the folks how to use the tools, right, it's not going to be successful. So change management is definitely big as well. So yeah,
thank you so much. I think those are very real problems, and I did not know Cummins was so widespread across so many time zones. Like Mongolia and Chile are just on the other sides of the planet, and also this speaks to the centralization of quality in Cummins, which is really good. Oftentimes what we see is manufacturing companies have splintering quality standards and groups, and everyone is doing their version of quality, and it's great that you guys are, well, at least for the reman part or whatever it is, it's a pretty centralized, and you're driving the changes from the same spot. It's a lot right. more difficult, but the documentation and the standards stay consistent. So
absolutely,
that is huge work that has to be done to achieve that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And even for first fit, we do that, right? We make sure that the same standards, same functional excellence practices are followed. We call it FEPs. Yeah. So it's globalization, right? How do we have global standards, right, for quality, for manufacturing, such that we can. Because our customers are same way, right? They're not local. We got global customers too. So they expect the same quality from each and every region. So.
Right. Absolutely. And the way Cummins is positioned as a brand, that is what people are really looking for. Extreme durability, very high quality, and Cummins has done well to get that out there and make people aware of this. So then you got to follow through with that kind of excellent quality, no matter what location or what economics it is, you guys got to make it work. So I can see how that is such an important focus area for Cummins. Yeah, let's move on to the last question, which is not actually the last question. There's a fun surprise question. If you had a magic wand to change something about your work, within reason, of course, what would that be and why?
One thing about my work, so since I interact with so many folks like globally on a daily basis, I think, yeah, the magic wand would be that if, hey, in an instant, if I can, you know, travel to that location, that would be ultimate, right? I mean, just one of the things that happened, like even local travel, for example, like Denver was one of the places where we have a master rebuild center. And I brought in more folks to support the work that I'm doing. And like, now how do you, in the middle of a pandemic, how do you take them to that site and show them what they're doing over there? Right. So we have to do a video, a live, a tour video, you know, walking video, kind of audio tour. But it would have been so much nicer if I was like, okay, let's just do a day trip and be there, and let's do a tour in person. Right. This is on Zoom. So, I mean, certainly Zoom and all definitely helps. Right. But
yeah,
but I think that's, you know,
with manufacturing, it's not the same.
It's
just not the same.
Yeah.
You need to smell the grease and the fluid in the air.
The black shellac, we call it. Yeah, it could be depending on newer. Yep, exactly, right? So that's one of the things I would say is to be able to do. And I'm pretty sure we would be there one day, right? Of course, this pandemic is not helping. But even after that, I think the travel times and those kind of things will get a lot faster travel. Ways will certainly help manufacturing, yeah.
Well, actually, the last part of your answer is like a hint to the next question. Because you mentioned that we'll get, you know, better traveling and better remote collaboration and work method. So
maybe AR as well, augmented reality.
Yeah. No, AR is manufacturing companies are pushing hard on AR as much as others are, right? As much as like gaming or stuff, manufacturers are pushing quite hard on AR, and I'm sure Cummins is also. Mm-hmm. So to that, the fun question is that if this was 2051, how would a factory be if you walked into it, or how would like your grandchild see the factory of 2051?
Factory of 2051. Maybe that's manufacturing 10.0. Yeah, I think, I mean, certainly it would be at a whole different level of automation. We would be working on more on the robotics at that point than the product, because now we have mastered that, hey, once the robotics designing and all that is such that, hey, once this is, solid, then product quality and the tolerances that we get are now so much tighter, and we know exactly what we are making. I think we'll be spending some, you know, more time on making sure that the machinery and the tools and all that is actually working the way they should, to make sure that we meet the quality standards and the manufacturing standards. Yeah, I mean, I think that's all this augmented reality. It would be all at that different level, right? We won't have to go and visit the plant. We would actually have that plant come to us, right? We would be able to see that
all
in front of us.
Like a hologram.
like a hologram, yes. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it may boil down to. It's a lot more automation. And in fact, we may even find by that we may not be even making engines. Who knows? We might be doing other types of ways of providing energy, right? And Cummins is doing that as well. It's not just a diesel engine for us, right? There's a whole lot of different types of engines and sources that we work on, fuel sources. Yeah, no, I think 2051, certainly manufacturing is going to be around, right? It's not going to go away, right? We got to manufacture things. Maybe a lot would be from a 3D printing standpoint, right? They might be able to find a lot cheaper ways to print things rather than going to suppliers for getting those parts. There'll be a lot more 3D printers in the space of manufacturing now.
Like common things that mining company could just print at their place and they don't have to like go to a dealership, probably not the core engine or whatever, but at least like a lot of the other tubing or wiring or what have you could easily be 3D printed in the future. So part of that is happening right now, but we usually use it for prototyping, not for production parts, but hey, if that's possible, this is possible. So Absolutely. Yeah, I think that was a very good answer. You spoke about AR and VR. Different people, they have different visions of the factory of the future, and AR and VR are certainly hoped to be a big part of it. Yeah. Problem is, they are not moving fast enough. But we all want them to.
Right. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It takes time to get a specific site onboarded onto a certain set of tools, and, you know, the training and change management and investments, and then justifying those investments too, right? So it certainly takes time, but I think we are on the journey, right? So I think by 2051, a lot would have changed for sure.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Rumit. I think this was a great conversation. You gave some great responses, and we got to know a lot about remanufacturing. We came to know how sprawling its facilities are, Cummins facilities, and the important work that you do in maintaining manufacturing quality, and just the whole important aspect of traceability. And this is where I just want to speak a little bit about Pashi, that genealogy is extremely important, and Pashi provides live genealogy logs that are fully traceable, and the traceability is information in terms of which device and which parameter a product interacts with is displayed in a continuously appended log and timestamped. So you always have a record of what that product has gone throughout its life. And this is also what a good MES or any good MES should be doing. It should provide that kind of transparency for something that might come back to your plant after like 3 years or 5 years, and you should be able to trace it back to the point of fault, because it could lead to other things that you may have overlooked, and it could have been other things that had gone wrong at that point in time. So it's super important. Also, just saying it to the listeners, that for any MES, you want their traceability and quality management system to be very, very robust.
Yep. No, I completely agree. Makes sense. Yep.
Well, thank you, Rumit, for giving your time and answering some great questions and just catching up.
Yeah, actually, I know
a lot more about your work than I should have known. We never talk about your actual
work. I know, right? We never do
work,
that.
So
that's good, yeah.
So thanks for teaching us about how the manufacturing works. And have a great day. And we'll meet soon.
All right, sounds good. Take care. Right. Yep.
Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe to the Means of Production podcast for more stories from people behind all the manufactured goods we use, love, and depend on. This episode was made possible by Pashi, the operating system for manufacturing. Pashi unifies the entire production process for any product, encompassing operator instruction and data input interfaces, stage logic and parameter thresholding, machine interfacing and configuration, robot programming and coordination, and stage-to-stage production flow control into a single Pashi program. Check us out at pashi.com. And until we meet again, have a fantastic day and take care.